Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, my very special guest is Victor Contreras with Early California Speaks. He is here today to talk about some great new presentations available to bring local historical figures to life for local students, organizations, and events. So, Victor, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm so honored to be here. I truly appreciate having the opportunity to meet your audience in this fashion. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome. It's great to have you back on the show again. So tell us about your organization and its programs for bringing history to life. What are some of the types of presentations that you offer exactly, and what kind of places are you hoping to bring these programs?
Well, we started Early California Speaks in 2019, and it's a result of my direct ancestry and working with Old Town San Diego State Park.
Yeah.
I started working in Old Town San Diego State Park because it's a direct result of my mother. My mother was tapped, as many other people were that are descendants of early California and early San Diego, in the celebration of the 200th anniversary of San Diego. And so they were tapped to provide historical documents, family stories, et cetera, et cetera. It was as a direct result of the efforts of these San Diego locals. And by San Diego, I don't mean just the cities, it's the county, because we were obviously spread out and below the border, because back then there was no border. Okay. So as a direct result of the research and documents and artifacts and all that that were brought in for the San Diego celebration, which gave birth to the city, county, and state parks in Old Town San Diego.
Fantastic. So, and then I get that you're doing presentations at schools for California history and English classes on, and what else?
Well, I'm a retired teacher, so that you know, schools are close to my heart.
Yeah.
And of course, California history is close to my heart because of my family.
And you're an actor, so you also do theater classes.
Yes, I was the head of the theater department of the School of Performing Arts in Chula Vista for a long time. So I have those stripes, and I actually taught at Cal State San Marcos
as
well.
That's great.
So all of those things came into play. And so what I decided to do is to research real people that actually lived here in the 1700s and 1800s to tell their story in short formats. We do approximately 10 minutes. And then when we go to schools or whatever, then we open it up to Q&A. And
And you go in costume, so you really, really bring it to life.
All of them are in period costumes. I'm not the only presenter, but we do period costumes, so we give it a very authentic feel.
Yeah. You have some of the women that we don't hear much about in the history books, but who are
well.
Doing
one of the unique things about women, in particular in California, because California was progressive even then. Okay, in Mexico and in the United States, it was not acceptable for women to drink in public, much less gamble. And in California, not only it was common, it was very acceptable. And one of the characters that we have, she tells her story because she had a rancho that was close to the mine fields of the gold rush.
Yeah.
So she dealt cards and had a little casino right there on a rancho.
That is amazing. And I understand that for some of these programs, you also have study guides, you know, for the teachers if they want to do follow-up lessons and, you know, coaching on how to use them. That just sounds great. What age levels is that for?
Well, to be perfectly frank, is my experience as an educator is, well, we focus on California history in the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And you can be sitting in a fourth grade classroom and you've got this student who reads at a high school level and this student that's learning how to read.
Yeah.
And they're sitting right next to each other.
Exactly.
So that we arm the teachers with three study guides at three different levels, regardless of whether we're going to a university or to an elementary school.
Excellent.
So that the teacher can use what best fits their students.
What a great idea. Now, I know you got a super talented team. Can you tell us about the background of some of the other participants?
I am extremely fortunate to have recruited and have trained and prepared some wonderful people. Some of the people have worked as docents, either as volunteers or whatever, mm-hmm. at state parks. Mm-hmm. Some of them are educators or past educators, retired. Some of them are authors. So we come from a wide range of backgrounds mm-hmm. besides, because I not only do I direct them and prepare them for the scripts, but they're directly taught on the history. So after any presentation, if the audience does Q&A, they're prepared to answer a wide range of questions about that character or that period of time or any part of in relationship to their monologue. So that whenever we go to a presentation, mm-hmm. we're well armed beyond the monologue
of information. Teachers among your troop, I understand, and
correct.
People that were board members of SAG-AFTRA, the actors.
Three of them
union.
Have been elected SAG-AFTRA board members.
Great.
One of them is the past president of the San Diego SAG-AFTRA local.
Oh my goodness,
so
what talent.
They have stripes. We have stripes.
Yeah, and then you've got another one who was, a former president of the Hispanic Public Relations Organization? And
he's actually not a presenter, but he's part of our administrative team.
Okay, and then a casting director?
And a casting director who's, she likes to take on the title of producer.
Okay, there you go.
So she, but she actually cast the last Luis Valdez play that was a full-length play in Los Angeles. So obviously she works with big-name people.
Yeah. So how is this whole thing funded? Are there sponsorship opportunities, grants, or do people hire Early California Speaks to come and do these programs, Victor?
Generally speaking, people hire us. Oftentimes it's a company or something. But one of the things that's really attractive mm-hmm. is somebody chooses to be a sponsor mm-hmm. to have a presentation at a school. Mm-hmm. And I suggest you talk to your tax consultant to verify or whatever. It's a tax deduction because it's a gift to a school.
I imagine you could do that if it was a nonprofit organization too, and someone wanted to
correct.
Sponsor that as the entertainment or educational component for a nonprofit.
Correct.
That's awesome. And
now, one of the things that because we have a long history, you and I, we've known each other for many years.
We have. Victor and I were both on the old Heartland board a long time ago. Heartland was our parent nonprofit when we first started East County Magazine, and he's done a couple of these readings on our show before and one of our events before. So we
what I like to offer
everything Victor does.
All of your listeners, and I'll give you my direct line because we have offices in Tijuana, San Diego, and Los Angeles. So mm-hmm. we cover a lot of geography.
Wow.
I'll give you my direct phone number.
Okay.
It's 619-301-8126. So any of your listeners, if they contact me directly, I'll offer them a 10% discount.
Oh my goodness, that's so generous.
Hey,
well,
I love you guys.
We appreciate that. I'm sure our listeners out there for KNSJ will appreciate that as well. And I guess you can't get the discount through the website, but if you want to go there and read more and get more information about Early California Speaks, just go to earlycaliforniaspeaks.com.
Correct.
So now, listeners, we have a real treat in store for you. Victor is going to give us a dramatic performance as an example of one of the real-life characters that he brings to life. And I'm going to ask you, Victor, if you can tell us a little bit about your character and how he ties in with your own background, your family tree, very colorful family tree.
Actually, this is a direct ancestor of mine.
One of your several famous direct ancestors, yeah.
And he was a member of the Spanish expedition that came here to form the missions.
Ah.
So going back to the 1700s, mm-hmm. okay? And as many people recognize, every time they created a mission, they had to have a military presence there to protect the mission.
Right.
Okay. So he just by chance was designated to be the a part of yeah. the presidio here.
What was his name?
Andres Cota. There were three Cota brothers. So he was one of three brothers that were all part of the expedition. So Andres Cota is a direct ancestor of mine. And a lot of the information that I'm going to share in the monologue, mm-hmm. you can go to history books in Mexico and history books in the U.S., and they don't tell you some of the things that I'm going to share in the monologue. For example, a kind of a preview. We say the Spanish expedition, which gives you the impression that they were all Spaniards. And they were not.
Interesting.
The officers were Spaniards and the priests were Spaniards, but the soldiers were Mexicans or Native Americans from Mexico.
Wow. Well, without further ado, listeners, we're going to introduce Victor Contreras with a dramatic presentation bringing history to life.
Bienvenida, bienvenida. When they say you to come to meet one of the Spanish soldiers from the expedition that helped establish the Misiones de California, you were expecting to see somebody dressed in a uniform. Pues I'm retired now. I have a rancho and I raise cattle, ganado, as did most of us when we retired. Although we developed our style of clothing that was unique to California, they were based in many parts like the uniforms of the officers. So they look a little like the uniform, and they have decorations on the sides and down the legs, and we have the sash. This was all copying from the uniforms of the officers. And so this is how we develop our clothes. Mi nombre es Andrés Cota. I had 12 of mis hermanos, two of my brothers. They were also soldados in the expedition. We were called leather jackets, so soldados del cuero. And we served under the Spanish flag to settle California. Please do not confuse us with being Spanish. Those who were born from Spain would never accept this. And they always looked down on us from Spain. And we were in the minds of them inferior to those that had direct bloodlines from Spain. You see, the Spanish had been in Mexico for 200 years before they sent an expedition to colonize and build pueblos here in California. Although they had already claimed California as part of their land, they didn't establish a colony or have a physical live presence here in California. So they come with the expedition to the West Coast. Now, the priests and the officers of the expedition were Spanish, but the soldiers, they were from Mexico, and most of them were Mexicanos or indigenous Indians from Mexico. We all wore our hair long and tied together to the back as a tribute to our Indian or Native American heritage. We did not totally abandon our roots. The Spanish recruited us to serve in the expedition to the West Coast with promises of great fortune and personal gain for taking our lives to this new land. So I joined the Spanish military, as did my two brothers, and we went off to settle the West Coast. The Spanish had long claimed the lands along the coast, but they had very little time or people there. The Spanish crown was concerned about the other countries trying to gain land in the New Americas, in particular the Russians, that were already starting settlements up to the north and blurring the lines between their
territories and the Spanish territories. So Spain was very concerned and wanted to put a military presence to defend against the Russians in particular, but anybody in general. This was making the division between Spain and Russia very blurred. The Spanish had been in Mexico a long time and had brought the word of Jesucristo, Jesus Christ, to the New World. My family had accepted the Catholic Church many generations ago, although we sometimes held on to some of our previous beliefs and traditions as Native Americans as well. We mixed them as we ourselves became mixed with the Spaniards. In much of Mexico, we developed a class system, with those with more Spanish blood to be at the top and those with more native blood at the bottom. Soldados were elevated a little higher than their bloodlines, but still not as high as those of Spanish blood. Many natives and myself joined the Spanish military because of this and to have stable work. For those who accepted to come to the expedition on the West Coast, we expected to have a new life and had great expectations. In Mexico, we had learned that many tribes and particular had similar gods and religious beliefs, but it did not account for all peoples. The Christian faith tied all peoples around the world under one God. This was different than native life. The word of God was written in Latin. This is a language from a long time ago, very old. And the only peoples that knew this language were the priests. The priests, they would translate the word of God to us and explain to us so that we could understand. We came to convert the natives along the West Coast of the word of the true God. We came with priests, so they too could learn about the true God as part of the new society we were going to create. We wanted to center our new society around the church, so we built the towns around the misiones, the missions we created, so the church and God were the center of our new society. In keeping with the teachings of the church, we gathered from the dominance of the Spanish, the new order did away with much of the class system that developed due to bloodlines in Mexico. So we did not follow this in California. We accepted people more on the basis of if you accepted the Catholic faith or not versus bloodlines and the true teaching of God in the new areas that Mexico came from. Conversion to the natives was not a simple matter. We recruited local natives to be the guides, and they became a major connection for us between our expedition and the tribes. In fact, the West Coast had more Native American tribes in small geographical areas than any parts of Mexico or the entire United States. Then we come, so we had two goals. One was to establish military forces and secure the region for Spain. But the second, maybe the more important, was to teach the natives the word of God. We are going to establish misiones and bring civilized society to the new lands, to teach the natives as our forefathers were taught, the guidance of the Catholic Church. As men who came from, and in many cases still felt, to be who we are as children of the one true God, but we would help the natives realize that there is a world far beyond their experience that they did not know, that we were all children of the one true God. Their tribes would be introduced to the larger world experience. We would also teach them about doing and living a life more closely approved by the heavens and not relying so much on hunting, but to grow crops and to raise animals rather than just hunt for them. The priests would also teach values and ways of being,
the wrong behaviors of stealing and lying would be sins and would be taught to be against God's will. The church would also teach a method of forgiving and regaining God's favor. So we could not only introduce the natives to a larger world, but also to the universe of the one true God. In many ways, the Christian teachings put the whole world in perspective and united it. Most of the native religions or explanations encompass their experience and only themselves as recognized people. Things were going to change what they knew forever, and they would join the larger world community. And this is what we were about.
Thank you, Victor. That was a fascinating reading about one of the Spanish soldiers, or soldiers with the early Spanish expedition founding the missions. It's really amazing to hear that come to life.
Yes, and there's little, and I hope people picked up on little details that are shared in the story that are not normally covered in history books.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So who are some of the other characters that Early California Speaks can bring to life when they do these presentations for schools and other organizations?
Well, we haven't stopped. We're still writing and creating things, but we have 8 stock stories that can be easily found on our website. And they include, of course, Andres Cota, which you just heard their story, but Bonifacio Lopez, who speaks about the cattle industry back in the day. Bartolo Riso, which was an Italian who came to California because Italy at that time was the toy capital of the world. Mm. And as they had, you know, AKA Pinocchio, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Okay. They overdid it. So they had too many toy makers. And then they started migrating to the United States. So Bartolo came to the East Coast. And again, too many Italians. So then he came and became the toy maker here in San Diego.
Interesting.
So he had no competition. Leonardo Cota. And I call him Captain Leonardo Cota because he was integrally involved in the Mexican-American War.
Ah.
And as many of you know, California was split. We were pretty much 50-50 as those that supported the United States and those who supported Mexico. He actually was one of the soldiers. He was a capitán, so he was an officer, mm-hmm. in the Mexican Cavalry.
Ah.
Now, the California Cavalry at that time was considered one of, if not the world's best cavalry, because they didn't get on horses when they joined the service. They grew up with horses and they were riding their own horses. So needless to say, they had great command of their horses. Maria Ortega is a woman. Now, we uniquely had a situation in California that was different than our host countries of Mexico or the United States. We were liberal then, let alone now, to use a political phrase.
I thought it was fascinating, by the way, in the monologue that you just read, that Russia was causing problems here, even way back then.
Yes.
But
one of the things that was true in Mexico and the United States is it was not publicly acceptable for women to drink in public, much less gamble.
Yeah.
It was 1,000% acceptable in California. And women went to cantinas and bars. And Maria, she actually had a rancho that was close to the gold mine fields. Mm-hmm. And so she ran a casino dealing cards from her own rancho. So as a matter of fact, she starts off her monologue by inviting the audience, would you like to play?
Oh, what a character.
And then we have Joaquin Murrieta. For those of you who don't know, Joaquin Murrieta is the real life California bandit that Zorro is based on.
Fascinating.
And so the real life story, and one of the things that I like to point out, you've all seen it in movies over and over and over again, that somebody gets cornered on a cliff, be them being chased by Indians or a posse or the bat, whatever. And the guy gets the horse to jump off the cliff into
right,
the
which
river.
Which seems completely unbelievable, but
in real life, that may have happened 2-3 times max. You've seen it in movies many more times than that. But Joaquin Murrieta actually did
that. He actually did it. And the horse survived.
And he.
Or do we know?
No, they both survived.
Wow. That's incredible.
So Juan Ramon Cota is another character. Now, for those of you who are familiar with San Diego history, the most famous gunfight happened in Old Town.
Mm-hmm.
One of the players.
Well, one of the most famous gunfights. We have the old Campo gunfight right out here in East County that a lot of people don't know about, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, well, I was talking about in San Diego.
The city. Yeah,
yeah,
well,
in
became,
the San
what became Diego. The city, yeah.
Yeah, in the city.
Okay.
And Juan Ramon Cota at the time was a teenager, like 15 years old, mm-hmm. but we portray him as an adult, so he's recalling what he saw. So he was an actual person to witness the gunfight. Mm-hmm. So he talks about it as an observer rather than a participant.
Yeah, and then speaking of gunfights, the old gunfight at the OK Corral in Tombstone, Arizona, Wyatt Earp, a lot of people don't know, came to San Diego at one point, and he's also one of the characters you bring to life. Tell us about that.
A lot of people don't realize that Wyatt Earp actually was here for 5 years.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he, of course, we know him as a lawman in the OK Corral gunfight, but he was also incredibly into playing poker. Okay. And so within the 5 years that he was here, he opened 5 establishments. Why? Because everybody wanted to play poker. Win or lose, to say, I played poker with Wyatt Earp.
That's just amazing. Well, thank you so much, Victor, for sharing so many of these fascinating stories from early California. Again, listeners, if you tuned in late, we've been speaking with Victor Contreras of Early California Speaks. It's an organization that you can find more about at earlycaliforniaspeaks.com, and they specialize in bringing these historical characters from San Diego County's past to life for schools and other organizations, you know, nonprofits, acting groups, anyone that wants to bring them in.
Victor. So we perform sometimes just for entertainment, and we brought it in for, as a matter of fact, I think our last private gig was at somebody's 70th birthday party. So we didn't pass out study guides there.
What fun.
So we do it for entertainment purposes or for educational purposes.
And speaking of both entertainment and education, Victor is going to be doing a presentation live for East County Magazine at our upcoming Fall Fiesta, which is going to be on September 11th in right here in La Mesa. And we're going to have an article up on that very soon at eastcountymagazine.org, or you can reach out to me at editor@eastcountymagazine.org. You can also reach out to Victor at his phone number. Again, your phone, Victor, is?
My direct line, because we, for the company, you know, we have numbers in Tijuana, San Diego, and Los Angeles, because we cover all of that area. And some of our presentations are actually available in Spanish.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so that we're not limited to not all of them. Wyatt Earp didn't speak Spanish, so he doesn't speak Spanish. We don't force that onto Wyatt. But some of the presentations are available in Spanish and in English. But my direct line for your listeners is so that you don't get caught up in our San Diego or L.A. or Tijuana phone number is 619-301-8126. And if you mention the magazine, I'll offer you a 10% discount.
Very nice. So just say you heard about this on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ. And you know, I think it's great in an era, especially when we are seeing all of this censorship of real history, you know, sort of the whitening of the history books, to see Native American voices, Spanish voices brought to life, you know, really in a very inclusive way so people can learn more about the rich history of our area and all of the people who lived here in the 1700s and 1800s.
One of the things that I find particularly amazing, not just in California, but throughout the Southwest, so many of the names of places are literally in Spanish. And then people forget, oh, Los Angeles is a Spanish word.
Yes, we can tell the non-Californians when they come here and they talk about El Cajon and La Jolla, right? Well, Victor, we are out of time, but I really want to thank you so much for taking the time. Victor Contreras from Early California Speaks to join us here today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.